Take RFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and live streaming of primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This programme was first broadcast on RFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of issues every week as seen through the lens of sustainability. It is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, where all students learn how to make their industries more sustainable. It is hosted by Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher, and joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene. Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio, broadcast every week on Otago Access Radio and podcast on sustainablelens.org and on oar.org.nz.
And welcome to Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio. I'm Samuel Mann. The show is co-hosted by me and Shane Gallagher. Shane's not here tonight. He's still getting well, aren't you, Shane? But I am joined by Fiona Clements, who's from the label Senorita Osomo. Did I get that right? And so we're going to be talking about her and her fashion label, in particular the sustainability angle to it, which is very strong. And she has recently become the chair of Sustainable Dunedin City.
That's right, I have.
So let's start with the big questions about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up out in Waitati here in Dunedin. I actually still currently live there now with my long-suffering parents, which is, you know, it's what happens. You have to be resilient in these times, and for me, financially, I just couldn't afford to pay rent, so that's where I am still. Yeah, I love it. I love being able to take my dog for a walk in the morning at Doctor's Point.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
I had absolutely no idea. There was none of that for me. I just wanted to float around in nature, basically. I still kind of do.
But you didn't just float through school.
No, I didn't just float through school. I didn't actually really enjoy school that much. I was bullied quite a lot. But that actually really taught me to be really resilient. And it also taught me to observe people, which is something I do a lot. And it's something I've been doing a lot recently, just observing what's been happening around the city. And it's been very interesting to see all these groups organising, which is really cool.
So eventually you've got yourself to fashion. Did you get there straight away?
No, I didn't. After I left high school, I kind of spent about 10 years floating around before I went to fashion school. I did work as a signwriter for about 5 years. But that was actually probably a big turning point in my life. I became really ill from all of the solvents that I was using in that job. I've never actually been able to prove that that's what made me sick, but I wasn't actually able to work after that. I had a migraine for over a year. I called it the realm of headachia. It wasn't particularly fun, and I'm 10 years later, I'm only really starting to feel like I'm well.
Hideous. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's actually when my label name came about. I really needed this kind of other persona to kind of help me out of that space, and Senorita Osomo just kind of was created through that. It kind of came partly from South Park. There was a episode where Cartman dressed up as a robot, and he'd made himself a robot suit out of a box, and he had Osomo written across the front. It was some acronym for something. I have no idea what it is now, but it just, that name, that awesome kind of thing, just really stuck with me, and I shifted it to sumo because I really liked that power and the strength that a sumo wrestler portrays, and their discipline that they have in there. And this Senorita is just the feminine side of it. And I have had people say to me in the past, well, Senorita's a feminine and Osomo's a masculine. It's kind of like you make clothes for transgender people. And I said, well, why not? So, I don't really care what your gender is. It's irrelevant to me in that kind of space. So, yeah, it's It was a big shift in my life. I was living in town at that point, and I actually had to move home to my parents because I wasn't actually capable. I was so ill, I wasn't really capable of looking after myself. I couldn't even sleep. You know, like I was still working 40 hours a week with this migraine, and one would believe me. And it was just, it was a really hard place.
So fighting through those headaches, were you dabbling in fashion?
No, I wasn't at that point. I was so the reason I went and worked there is because I kind of always wanted to do screen, like be graphic designer. But when I went to school, that wasn't really something you learnt to do. We didn't really have computers. We were still in MS-DOS world and all that kind of stuff. And if you wanted to do graphic design, that wasn't really something that was taught. The only design was kind of the architectural, you know, space. And when I was in seventh form, I actually did the fifth form graphics paper. I honestly did not learn anything in that class. But I did meet one of my best friends there, so I'm okay with that.
There's a win. Now, it was weird, wasn't it? I wanted to be a stage designer.
Yeah.
And it just didn't exist.
Yeah, so it's, you know, when 20 years ago, those things don't exist. So, I mean, I tried actually for years to get an apprenticeship at a screen printers here in Dunedin, but they didn't want me because I was female, and that was really hard. So, you know, I'm fully capable of doing that job. Doesn't matter what my gender is. So it was one of those really difficult kind of spaces. And then I kind of knew someone that was leaving this job, and she just kind of shoulder tapped me. And I'd done a bit of advertising design at Aoraki Polytech and at classes, and just kind of...
So other than not to... Was it breathe the chemicals or touching them?
Yeah, it was both. It was because, you know, I'd be cleaning lots of things and then, like, doing big signs on the side of buildings. And there's so many around town that I walk around and go, I did that. Wow. But it wasn't a particularly great workplace, to be honest. It was quite misogynist, and... I can now talk about it 10 years later because I actually got fired from that job because I called the police on the boss's son, who was an alcoholic and driving to work drunk, and I just got sick of it. I got to the point where actually, hey, you need to not be here and trying to use power tools and tell me what to do because you're still drunk.
So looking for some positive.
Yeah.
What did you take positively from that? I imagine there's something about telling stories or how do you, the production side?
I guess I really enjoyed the job and I was really good at it. The creative side of it was for me what I was really into. There were a couple of people that worked there as well who I'm still friends with, and they were very supportive. One of them's had a few heart attacks from all the solvents as well. You know, like it's actually quite a... Like no one really understands how bad it is to... be around those kind of things all day, every day. A lot of panel beaters get the same thing because they're around the paints. But I guess positives, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about my strength. It pushed me into fashion, actually. So leaving there pushed me into fashion. I still needed to be creative, and I decided to enter a competition which was run by Arthur Barnett's and the Nova Down Alice Fiber. They had this competition called Nova Down Fashion Feathers, and they gave you a bit of fabric and a bag of feathers, and then you had to go and create a piece of work for that. And so in 2008 I made a fully felted butterfly wearable art piece, it's actually amazing, and I still have it. And I won that year. It was one of the very first pieces I've made and put on show, and I've never been able to get that response from an audience again. Just because it was really brown and bland on the front, and then on the back it was really bright blue and brilliant. So every time she turned around on the catwalk, every time they saw the back, the audience did that. And, like, never been able to do that again. So I'm just kind of like, was that my peak or what, you know? But I don't think so. I've done a lot since then in that space, yeah.
But you must have realised at that point that this is a thing you wanted to do.
Yeah, it gave me the confidence to actually apply to Polytech to go and go to fashion school. My grandmother was a tailoress. She actually learnt when she was 14. She went to H&J Smith and got an apprenticeship. And she learnt to be a tailor there. And she had a shop down North East Valley later on in life. So she made. I spent a lot of time with her as a child. And I am very privileged to have her things in my studio now. One of my goals this year is to learn how to use her big standing loom so that I can weave all of the off cuts that I've collected over the past 8 years of being in fashion into my story, my zero waste story. Yeah,
there's a very long history of political activism and the tailoresses in North East Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of them in the suffragette petition to get the vote. The percentage of women that signed it in Dunedin was massive.
Yes,
it was mostly because of the organising of those tailors.
I found out that my great-great-grandmother actually signed that petition twice, so sounds a bit cheeky, but like me, so, you know, comes from somewhere.
So you got yourself to fashion school.
Yes, I did. And I went there because I wanted to learn more technical skills. I didn't have a lot of technical skills. I was just making, you know, off other things that I had and remaking stuff. It wasn't until my second year when I realised how wasteful all my classmates, you know, they would be making things and then they'd throw their offcuts in the bin and they're huge and I'm just like, honestly, what are you doing? You could still use that, you know. And so I actually put a bin in our classroom and it was like textiles only. And for me, it was more of a financial kind of I didn't really have the money to go out there and buy all this new fabric and use it, so I started collecting what they were throwing away and started researching into how wasteful the industry really is. And my, that's a good, you know, that's just, you just skyrocket from there, basically. The industry is just one of the most destructive. Oh, actually, it's about eighth in the level of destruction globally. A lot of people think it's the second, but there's been a bit of research done recently that it's more about the eighth that kind of sits behind agriculture and oil and others for and you know, if you're looking at the entire system, yeah.
Where did that value come from? Both the value to notice that there was something wrong, but also the value to do something about it. Putting the bin in the classroom was, you know,
it was kind of necessity for me, financial necessity, yeah. I hate seeing things wasted. I've always, like, my mum's always made our clothes and all that kind of stuff, and, like, I've, you know, always made, used my hands and done what I could and made food and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it was just, it's a resource. It's not waste. And, like, even I'm still talking about it as now as waste. My language hasn't changed yet into trying to shift that waste word out of my language and talk about it as a resource. So it is a resource and it's just being thrown away. I think for me that's what it was, just being, where is it going? And if it's going to landfill, like, I have done so much learning over the past 8 years about all that kind of stuff, I just go, well, I can't. I had to set up a non-profit because I have so much textile waste here in Dunedin. So,
where's it coming from?
We get donations. I got donated 142 kilos today of textile waste. Yeah,
from
a local designer who had it sitting there and didn't want to throw it out.
At least they're keeping it, recognizing maybe we should.
It's still useful. It was merino. Like, don't throw that out.
Wow. So, zero waste fashion seems like a long way to go from where we are now.
Oh yeah, it is.
So what are the contributors to the bad bits?
Well, there's a lot of humanitarian issues in the bad bits. Right now in Bangladesh, there are garment workers who are struggling to be safe in their work. They have, for the past couple of weeks, been been trying to hold on to the Bangladeshi Accord, which came out of the disaster that happened in 2013, the Rana Plaza disaster. Out of that disaster came an accord which kept them safe, which kept them, you know, having not locked doors. They have fire safety, you know, they have brakes, all that kind of stuff. That accord was going to...
Is that international?
Yeah. I think, I'm not sure whether it's just in Bangladesh or not, actually. It was going to end. It had an end date, which was a couple of weeks ago, and so right now they're trying to push to keep it so that they don't go back to worse practices. So, I mean, that's a huge thing. The injustice is a really big part of it for me. I find it really difficult to watch that sort of thing happening. And I think it's really important that we are aware that that's where our clothes are coming from. And then we go to things like water usage. It takes 2,720 litres of water to make one T-shirt. That's how 2,720 litres. That's how much one person drinks in 3 years. I can't remember what the numbers are for a pair of jeans, but, you know, it's pretty similar. But, I mean, there's also things like the Aral Sea is at 8% of what it used to be because all of that water's been taken to go and grow cotton. You know, so, and like now they've realised they need to do something about it and they are starting to try and regenerate that space again by planting and, you know, it used to have a great, they used to be able to fish and all that kind of stuff, but it's just not there anymore because governments have kind of gone, no, you know, you can just take that water. We don't grow a lot of textiles here, but we've still got people trying to steal our water because it's a very precious resource. Oh, no, I can't remember what my other point was as well.
Garment workers, water use, the actual fabric, like the offcuts.
Yeah, there's manufacturer's waste as well. And when I was in fashion school, I read a paper and it said it was about 15% of offcuts are wasted during the manufacturing process. But I know now it's between 8 and 30%, depending on what type of garment is being cut. A lot of that either gets incinerated or just goes to landfill. And there are quite a few people
some
trying
of it
to.
Some must be unavoidable. If you're cutting out a hole or something,
it
must
can,
end up with a
there
bit.
Are ways of making patterns that have no waste, though. And they do look like normal clothes. So there's no reason why we can't shift it.
Your T-shirt's still got the right number of holes.
Yeah, absolutely. But you just have to teach the designers that there's actually alternatives, and they have, like, it is a lot more difficult, and it definitely bends your mind a bit when you first start getting into it. Because you're going from a flat pattern to something three-dimensional. It is actually quite a difficult thing to do. But there are people out there working on it, and there are people out there who are working with those scraps as well. There's a great designer in New York called Zero Waste Daniel, and I'm loving the stuff that he's coming out with now. He's making patches, he's making re-roll, which is what he's calling all the scraps sewed back together, and he's doing some really great social media, actually, around the fashion industry and what it, you know, he laughs at it, basically, and I really like that.
And then there's what's surely the inherent business model of selling more stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And making it seem like the last year's stuff isn't possibly good enough.
Well, not even last year's stuff, last week's stuff, right? Like, we've come to, like, having 52 seasons in a year, and we really don't need that much stuff. Like, oh, I can't wear that many clothes, I can't remember the numbers, but I know that there is 60 billion metres squared of manufacturers' offcuts globally. Like, that's just the offcuts. So what's that showing us of the garments that are being wasted? I know that there are people working on shifting that, but until we see that on a really huge scale from people like H&M, then we're not going to create a shift in the industry. It's got to come from the leaders. And I know Fashion Revolution are doing a really good job of pushing them to do that. And so I am a Fashion Revolution. I'm on the working committee for New Zealand. So I've run a few events over the past few years here in Dunedin, and I've done a little bit of activist work by I wove the Robbie Burns statue in the Octagon, a corduroy out of T-shirt strips in 2015 and put that up during ID Week.
So tell me, what is Fashion Revolution?
It's a global movement that started after the Rana Plaza disaster. Basically, there was a few women who, quite well known in the industry now, who really just went, enough is enough. And we need to make a global movement to create a shift and create more awareness. So that's what it is. We advocate for people to get involved, anyone, because we all wear clothes. So, and if you're not wearing clothes, then you're obviously really comfortable with yourself, and you know you can do that, and that's fine. But the rest of us, you know, we need them, and so we've got to know where they're coming from, and basically be curious, find out, do something is kind of the, and who made your clothes is the call to action that they do. Asking people to ask retailers where their clothes are coming from, and like that's really confronting. A lot of people aren't really at that point where they're comfortable with doing that sort of thing, so providing support for that. Maybe you want to write a letter instead. So there's lots of educational resources on their website to do that, lots of downloads, and at our community sewing room on Vogel Street, we do have a few booklets and stuff that you can come and have a read of. We do sell them for $5 because we want to, and that money just goes back to Fashion Revolution. So, yeah, it's a great, great initiative, and I'm very supportive of it.
But if I'm at, I won't talk about the particular places, but if I'm at a big branded place and I say, who made this? They're not going to know.
No, they won't. They probably won't. So it's called a transparency, basically. Let's be transparent about the system. Like, where is this coming from? But you will find the brands that are being more ethical, ones that are, say, on the Good On You app, which is a really great way of finding local Australia and New Zealand kind of brands that are doing good things. You know, there's information there. There's also the Tier Fund Ethical Fashion Guide, which rates brands over four different kind of things, and I don't have the details in my brain, but it gives you a rating of how good they are in those areas, and so there have been instances like Icebreaker, when they didn't participate they got an F, but when they did participate they're at a C minus or whatever, you know, and it shows you what they're doing to get there, and then it shows them how they can improve as well and what they can keep doing to do that.
Do you think those big brands are taking it seriously?
I think they are now. It's what I'm seeing. There's lots of things happening in the UK, in Europe, about them shifting. There's lots of conversations going on. I think currently there's a Copenhagen Fashion Summit happening, and there's lots of conferences happening around the world as well that are really talking about sustainable fashion, and they're not just fashion shows, you know, like it's not just about putting the high and mighty out there and looking at the garments on stage. It's actually what's behind it and how can we make the shift. There's lots of initiatives happening, like the Clean Clothes campaign, the Labour Behind the Label, War on Want, and there are many others that are working towards creating a shift there. So yeah, it's really awesome to see. I'm loving the fact that these things are happening.
That war on want, is that the war on moving from want to need?
I think so, yeah.
Because that's, you know, that's fundamental to fashion, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. What do we really need? Do you need 100 t-shirts and 50, you know, like, I know there's...
I need that many t-shirts.
Well, it depends how sweaty you are, I guess, you know, like...
I collect the t-shirts.
Days like this. So it's been funny, recently there's been a thing come out about single-use t-shirts. So like the single-use cup and the single-use plastic bottle, single-use t-shirts are actually just as detrimental, you know, those ones that are branded with the sports thing or the marathon that you've run today, but how often are they really worn after that event? And, you know, it's just as wasteful to do the branded T-shirt as it is to buy that plastic bottle.
Some of my T-shirts are going to get an airing, a wearing in the next few days.
Yeah. Good.
So tell me about your label.
So I've been trying really hard to be zero waste. So I don't actually call myself a fashion designer at all. I really don't like that term. I'm a zero waste textile practitioner because it's not just about making clothing, it's about using the textiles and creating a higher quality product out of whatever the textiles are, because I get given a lot more than, you know, stuff like canvas, really thick felted wool, leathers, banner material, sacking, you know, like I've got to come up with innovations and ideas around how this can be reused. It's been a very slow process for me. I'm only one person, and I physically can't sit at a sewing machine for 8 hours a day and sew. Like, it's just not something that I can do. And I don't want to either. Like, I really like the research and design part of it, but the monotonous, I get really bored with that, and it's just not me. And I don't like making the same thing over and over again. So I try, I mean, I do at times, and I do have a friend that occasionally comes in and helps me.
So what sort of process do you go through? If something comes in through your door, a big bale of canvas triangles or something?
It tends to sit there for a while I think about it. I do have to come up with that kind of stuff, you know, what is plausible for this and what are the possibilities around this textile and how can I use it? It depends what it is too, you know, if it's small offcuts, how does that work? Or if it's a large, if it's larger pieces, that's kind of where more I've been working recently and trying to make zero waste patterns and, okay, make fun little things for myself to do, like what can I do with this one piece of fabric by only cutting it once or only sewing, say, three seams or something like that. And one of my best sellers is actually one of those, the Zero Waste Goddess tunic. The response I get from women when they wear it, they're just like, oh, I just feel so luxurious, you know, I'm just, you know, in this kind of, they're in this other space, and I'm just like, wow, that is so cool, you know, that it makes them feel that good. And so that's why it got called the Goddess tunic, because it was, it made them feel that way.
Do you think that's because they know the story behind it?
Or I don't know if they did really know. It was the, like, some, because I might, so I'll collect textiles, and so I'll find out whether it's big enough to do this pattern out of, and if it is, then it goes in that box. And so I just, you know, like, I've got different colours and different textiles and different textures. So, you know, sometimes they're a knit, sometimes they're not. So they're all kind of a little bit different. And there was one, it was Mary McFarlane. She's an awesome artist, lives out in Port Chalmers, Kerry's Bay. She was the one that said to me, oh, I just feel like I'm wearing water. And I was like, oh, fantastic.
So do you have an ongoing range, or is it like one-off items? How does that work?
I have the same patterns, and I make them out of different fabrics that I collect. So, it varies on what comes in my door as well. Like, I have another pattern that I've made, which is my zero waste overalls. And so the pattern's actually just a big rectangle, so there's no waste in it, and all the lines that make the shapes are inside that. And I took it off a classic pair of Dean Worker overalls. And they look pretty much exactly the same, except there's a few extra pockets, because that's what all the little offcuts ended up being, okay, was pockets. So for me, that was really fun, like figuring out how do I go from this pattern that isn't zero waste into this one that is zero waste. And it took me about 3 goes of adjusting the pattern, and then I just hit the nail on the head, and it's really awesome. And I love wearing those. Like, I haven't sold that many of them because they're slightly expensive, and, you know, because it takes me a bit of time to make them, but I love wearing them. I feel like a child. Like, I feel like a kid. My kid just comes out when I put them on, and I just want to run around. And
given that moving to zero waste is seemingly a bit of a puzzle, it's a good job then that you're enjoying this puzzle solving aspect.
I've always loved puzzles, yes. Figuring things out, yeah.
Is that something which is taught at fashion?
Not really, no. Well, I know it's not really taught here. I've had a couple of interns come from Christchurch, and I've had one from here, and like they are interested in learning it, but I don't know if they're really teaching too much of it. Yeah, I mean, I have done a little bit of teaching around that. Started last year, I actually went down to SIT Southern Institute of Technology and taught for 3 days around, like, it was a zero waste pattern making course that I invented for 3 days, and that was so fun, and I'd love to do more of that because I do think it's really important that we teach those skills of how to create zero waste patterns. And we have so many tools in our pattern making toolkit to do that, but we just don't really know how to shift from the generic way we do things now to get to that.
Do you think we're going to seriously move to the Everlasting Clothes? I've forgotten what the company was called, the jeans company, the Everlasting Jeans or something, where they promise to look after them forever.
I think there are people doing that. I think it will take a long time before we get there. Yeah, it's a hard one because you've got to convince people that it's actually okay to, like, you don't actually really need to wash your jeans. Like, they're not going to get any dirtier after 2 weeks than they will after 2 years of wearing them, and they'll be really well worn in then, and they'll feel really good. So don't wash them, or just chuck them in the freezer. It does the same thing.
Is it the same design? Or do you design to make something last for a long time?
You can do both, I think. I think you can design to make things last longer, absolutely. You know, like, where do they wear out? Elbows, knees, crutch, those are the types of places. You know, if you can just replace this bit, the bit in the crutch, instead of having to replace the whole pant, then you're doing better than having to remake and go out and buy and find something new. Yeah.
But that's not in the interest of the company that wants to sell
you a new
pant.
Oh, no, of course it's not. So, and that's the issue, you know, like, they're out there to make money and make more and sell as much as they can. They're not really thinking about the long-term significance of that. And we need to, like, places like Patagonia, who will repair and take the stuff back and do, you know, they don't buy this jacket campaign that they had. It was fantastic. And they, I think they sold more jackets because of that campaign than they had in a while. So, you know, if we're thinking about long-term, we're thinking about repair, then We need to do those sort of things.
But you couldn't do that because then nobody would buy your stuff.
I don't really want, to be honest, right now, I don't really want, I have a real issue with marketing as well. I find it really difficult. And I'm at this point now where I'm going, is producing more stuff the answer? And it's not for me anymore. I don't really feel that comfortable with it. I'm kind of just at this point where I want to shift away from producing more stuff and want to help people and teach people and be of service rather than doing that. So it's been a really interesting summer of thought.
And the last time I saw you, you were walking across the stage, graduating something.
I was.
What was that?
Graduate Diploma in Sustainable Practice. That's been I really enjoyed the course. I did it over 3 years, which is not usual. But I had to fit it around my life and to fit it around my health as well, because health is a really important part of my life for me, and it's why I set up my business. I actually have a hereditary nerve condition. It was quite rare, and I have to be really conscious of where I'm at and what I'm doing, so I did it in a limited full-time, did that course limited full-time just to make that work for me and work around my business and work around my non-profit and, yeah, work around the fact that I don't really like getting up early and I want to have time in the morning to go for a walk and just relax and not have too much pressure on, you know, because brain gets tired, yeah.
So what did you learn?
What I learned, it was mostly, I felt, it was a kind of personal transformation more than anything. Yes, I did focus a bit on my business and a bit on my nonprofit, but it was really about meeting like-minded people and being part of that community, which I was really...
It's an amazing group.
Oh, man. The first day I walked in there, I cried because I was missing it, and I knew that I had found the right people. I'd found the tribe that I really needed to be around, and because I was in the fashion industry, right? And, like, and I'm also in the fashion industry, and I'm in this box over here that no one else really understands because they're so over there in their little ego space and they don't care about being sustainable at all. And so for me it was really fantastic to be part of that, and I've got some really great friends now, and it's really cool. So I'm really grateful for that course, and, you know, it's changed now, but that's also, it needs to.
And you had a banner on your back as you graduated.
I did, yeah. So I'm a bit of an activist. Couldn't really help it. Kind of came out with it the night before. What did it say? Disrupt your cognitive biases, people. The future awaits you. I really think we need to... for me, like, I've learned how to disrupt my cognitive biases, and I've seen it help me shift and change and grow. And so I really do think being aware of what a being aware of what a cognitive bias is will help you learn to grow and change and give yourself the things that you need to be more resilient, really.
What cognitive biases have you realized you have and changed?
It's been a lot of mental stuff, a lot of stories I tell myself. Because of the bullying as a child, it was quite negative. I didn't really like myself up until recently all that much. So it's been about really the stories that I tell myself, and fear as well. There was a lot of fear. I've had one full-time job in my life, and it was the one that I got really sick in. So, you know, like, I've never...
Don't try that again then.
No, I didn't. So I've always, you know, like, I've never really been able to fit into that the system. Don't like it. And I don't want to be part of it. I want to be in that space where we're showing what's possible in this new way of living. Because the system that we operate in now is really detrimental to human condition, and I don't believe that we should be so unkind to each other and so inhumane and living in such poverty that we do now. Yeah.
But if you want to change a system, say the fashion system, do you do that from inside or from outside? How do you go about changing that sort of system?
It's really, like, that one's so huge, and it's very difficult. And like I've kind of been trying here, and I know that I have had a little bit of influence on the community here in Dunedin, but I know that it's not enough, and I'm losing energy for it these days. Fashion revolution is probably one of the things that, you know, being part of that community that is working towards it and keeping collaborating together and connected, I think that's probably one of the biggest way that it's going to shift. And it's just awareness raising, really. So, like, there's still an education, they're still asking for transparency. Like, we're not at any way, like, no one, people aren't really interested in shifting that space yet.
Do you go to fashion shows?
I have been to fashion shows, yes. Do I enjoy them? No. I find them to be quite a large space of judgment. And judgment for me is something that I'm really trying hard to shift in my own personal life. And they make me feel gross. So I don't, like, I like clothing, but I don't really want to be judging people. Yeah, it's hard, but yeah.
I'm just wondering, is it a balance between the wearable, but that's not necessarily a criteria for fashion fashion shows, is it? But the aesthetic or whatever it is, and the backstory.
I want to know how they got there. Like, that's more for me what it's about. And I want to know their processes. So just seeing something on a catwalk isn't really enough for me. I want to know the story that's behind it. Yeah, and I love seeing the ethical people that are coming out now. Like, there's some really great stuff happening, and like, I hear people complaining, oh, it's too expensive, and, you know, like, it's still hippie and all this kind of stuff. It's actually not anymore. Like, there are some amazing designers out there who are working in the ethical space, and their whole supply chain is transparent, and they are doing some really great stuff. So, like, we've got quite a few in New Zealand. So I can't even remember. People like Koto are really amazing. And we've got, say, Masami clothing as well. We Are Yoga. That's another good brand. You know, so, I mean, that's like three. There's so many more than that.
If I was trying to buy a new T-shirt, what should I look out for?
Organic cotton, yeah. But always buy organic if you can, because there's less pesticides on it. People don't realise that the skin is the largest organ on their body, and that whatever you put on it absorbs through your skin. So whatever chemicals or dyes are in your clothing, they are going into your body. So natural fibers are the best thing to look for. I advocate for hemp. Hemp is one of the best textiles we have out there. There's too much stigma attached to cannabis still, and like that is really frustrating for me because hemp will solve all of our plastic issues. But yet we just don't, you know, we can't get past the fact that it's cannabis, and but it's not. Similar plant, but like they have different properties to them, you know, like... We can move past this now. Surely, we used to make rope out of it, and it's crazy that New Zealand was kind of pegged as being that by the Queen was pegged as being the hemp growing space and as the colony, you know. But we just don't think we've ever actually got there. But that's okay. We're kind of getting there now. There's a lot of people growing hemp in New Zealand. I think it's fantastic. It's kind of one of my dreams. I want to do that too.
Do you have anything in your boxes of stuff that you really haven't got a clue what you're going to do with?
Yep, absolutely.
And are they sort of like been there for a few years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got a lot of boxes of stuff that have been there for a few years. Yeah, I'm going to have a clean out shortly and just kind of go what's viable for me to hold on to and what's going to go downstairs into the non-profit for everyone else to use.
Oh, I see.
Mm. So we have a community sewing room. I've got a massive swap shop of textiles that people can just come and use, take, exchange. Like, we have an abundance of textiles. And I know that Dunedin has 4,000 kilos of textiles going to landfill every year. So...
Is there that much being made in the city?
No, it's people buying stuff that they don't need and throwing it away. Away! Where's the magical away?
So you have got yourself involved in Sustainable Dunedin City.
I have, yeah.
Congratulations. So,
thank you. I'm not sure about it yet, but you know.
What are you going to do?
Well, right now I'm just learning the systems that are in place, like how to email everybody and how to use MailChimp. But the annual plan's coming out soon, so we kind of want to submit on that. The end of the year in October, we've got a local body election. Sustainable Dunedin City usually does a forum, so a candidate forum. One thing I'm really interested in doing is getting people using the public forum and talking to the council a lot more. So I've never actually been to one of those, and it's definitely something I'm going to have to put on my list. But I feel like if we can get our voices heard, then... maybe things will shift. I've got quite a good relationship with the waste team at the DCC because I'm really interested in resource, wasted resource, and so I've been talking to them quite a lot, and I'm really really impressed with their plans for shifting resource recovery. And so I'm excited about that, which is not going to be coming out until the end of the year, but it's going to be a really interesting shift for us as a community, and we will have to be sorting our own rubbish a little bit more, and you know, like we're going to have to change the way we're using things, and like that's actually really good for us. So like I also found out the other day that polystyrene can be recycled, which is very interesting. But anyway, SDC, yeah, the other thing we want to do is kind of create a calendar on our website of all the events that are happening around the city, because it's something that people have been asking for a while, and like it's a massive job, but we kind of feel like if we can be that one point of contact, then it might be really easy for people to find out what's happening. And like it's so awesome seeing the really cool stuff that is happening in the city. I'm loving all the community gardens that are popping up, and I'm loving seeing places like the Rad Kids Art that's started up. It's starting next week. They've got classes starting next week, so for after-school classes, and it's based around waste minimisation. So they're collecting waste from businesses, and they're doing art classes for kids after school with it. So it's primary and high school as well. So you know, they've got some really cool stuff happening, and they're going to have artists coming in, and you will be directly talking with artists and working with them on projects. So I really think things, initiatives like that are something we want to champion. And we have things like Clip Joint Hairdressing, who are carbon carbon neutral or carbon zero. They've just had an accreditation. They do a lot of recycling and they use lots of vegan products, and you know, they're really up there with that kind of stuff. So like the businesses in Dunedin that are leading that kind of space is really awesome.
The Marie Kondo cleaning.
Oh God.
Is it what impact is that having on the resource recovery system?
It's not. It's saturated it. The op shops overseas are complaining they can't take any more in because people are just having clean outs and putting it away in op shops, right? But we don't need them. We can't process it. Like, we don't have anywhere for it to go. In New Zealand, we don't have anywhere for it to go. It just, actually, our textile recycling system is pretty hideous. We don't really have one yet. It's happening. The formery is trying to make a circular up in Wellington. They're trying to make a circular textile reuse program, which is really awesome. And we are trying to collect it and hold on to as much of it as we can so that people can come and reuse it and upcycle and that kind of stuff. But we don't have it. Like, the 142 kilos that came in today has kind of stocked up our storeroom, and we really don't have any more space. But the message is, I mean, great, people are tidying up and sparking joy in the things that they want to keep. But honestly, if you're not thinking about where it's going or how you're reusing it, or like, are there items in your wardrobe?
Because clearly it's sparking joy at the start. But
yeah.
Why would you buy it in the first
place?
But do we need to lessen that joy at the start? clearly we need less throughput.
Yeah, we need less throughput. We need to learn how we, like, when you're shopping, what do you actually need? Not what do you want, like, oh, this is so pretty, I've got to have it, you know, like, that's how we shop a lot. I haven't bought any, I think this T-shirt that I'm wearing might have been the last thing that I've bought new in a really long time, but I have the skills to make my own and upcycle, you know, so it's about having a few more, like, getting back to our traditional skills of sewing. Like, we used to downgrade our clothing from adult to child to cloth, you know, to, you know, cleaning cloths and all that kind of stuff, to rags, and then it gets thrown out when it's at the point where it's no longer useful, and it was usually a natural fibre, so it could be composted. But we've got so
and that's
many
probably a journey of several years.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But we've got so many synthetics now that I really believe they're going to do a lot of damage to humans, and not just humans, but also where they're going in the end. And you can't really recycle it. And then we've got all these people like pulling fishing nets and all this plastic out of the ocean and then recycling it into polyester. Polyester isn't really a great textile to be wearing. It just makes you sweat and smell. So, like, I don't really understand that. How is that a good thing?
Okay, some questions to end with. Oops, in a bit of a hurry. Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
Not really. Sustainability is not really a word I'm all that into. I rather like regeneration. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I'd rather regenerate, because we're past the point of needing to sustain. We want to make it better for future.
What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Oh, wow. The Robbie Burns, the corduroy I made for the Robbie Burns statue has probably been the most exciting one, yeah.
Because of the thing itself, or the feedback it got?
The activist way that it just kind of happened and didn't, yeah. Got in people's faces and...
You didn't get arrested?
No, didn't get arrested. Didn't get any parking fines for parking next to the statue and getting up there.
So we're writing a book about these conversations. We're calling it Tomorrow's Heroes. So what is your superpower?
My superpower?
Yeah.
I can blink and be anywhere in a second.
Not an... I'm looking for a real superpower.
Real superpowers.
What's getting you into the mansion?
I'm quite an intuitive human, so I'm really good at reading people. Yeah.
Reading people. So you've answered this several times, but I'm going to ask you it anyway. Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yes, very much.
Do you think it's important?
Absolutely.
Does everybody need to be an activist?
No, everybody doesn't need to be an activist, but I do believe we need some to stand up and shout louder, because there's not enough of that and there's too much injustice in the world.
What are you hoping to achieve?
Connection, a resilient community, awesome people doing awesome things, being more awesome. I love being more awesome, it's so great.
Awesome. I had a learner a couple of years ago that insisted that I shouldn't write awesome on things. They said, don't tell me I'm awesome, that's not helpful. I thought it was good.
I think it's quite good. I like it. I wouldn't have named my label that if I didn't.
No. So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
My brain doesn't stop working. What gets me out of the bed in the morning? Nature. I really love being in nature. So, yeah, I want to see trees and I want to be in the sun and I want to be at the beach. Yeah.
What's the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next couple of years?
I think kind of right now it's the whole Sustainable Dunedin City project. How can I make that happen, and how can I get this community to be more connected and visible and having conversations?
You said before about it showing what's possible, a new way of living.
Mm.
How many people do we need to convince, or do you need to convince?
Probably about 25%, I reckon. Then it'll kind of just snowball from there.
That high?
I don't know. That's just something I made up.
Yeah. I'm thinking of things like the Transition Town movement, where they say it's not about, you know, telling people that what they should be doing.
Yeah.
Let's just get on and do it.
Yeah, showing them it's possible. Absolutely.
And so, you're doing that in terms of the fashion. How can you scale that? Do you think, without wanting to impose your model on other people, do you think you've found a model that could be applied in other
Absolutely,
areas?
I do. I really do think so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've learned to be low waste in my life as well through being zero waste in my practice. And I'm not zero waste in my life because it's just too impossible at the moment. And I do have to live slightly conveniently. I still buy plastic things occasionally, but that's not every day. Yeah.
If someone was going to try following in your footsteps, what would you recommend?
Go and intern with someone who's doing that so that you can learn from them. Yeah, and they will, like, I love sharing what I'm doing with people and love giving them the opportunity to experiment and take a bit of risk, because you don't really get to do that a lot when you're learning at tech. You kind of got this prescribed thing that you've got to do, but if you get to go and because that's how I learned, was just doing it by myself and experimenting, risky.
Is it big concepts, a mindset shift? Is it a whole lot of technical things that you need to learn how to do? Where's the big questions or the big things you have to learn?
There's a little bit of technical stuff, I think, but it's shifting. I think with zero waste, it's about shifting the perception of what fashion, and I'm air quoting here with my fingers, fashion.
I can see.
It's just what fashion actually is. Is it fashion, or are we just trying to make clothing for people? You know, are we just trying to, that's the first form of shelter for us. So is that what we're trying to achieve, the needs? Are we trying to, you know, or is it we just in want? Are we still wanting, you know? I think that's, fashion is very want-based. I'm very much focused on needs.
So if you could have a miracle occur tomorrow morning, what would you have happen?
For myself?
Anything
or for,
you
like the universe?
You've got a magic wand and you're waving it.
Wow. I like kindness, that we're a lot more kinder to each other, and that all those inhumane injustices aren't happening anymore. We value our people. I have a quote that I have on the back of my jacket, Aotearoa, not just a population but a people, so that we're not seen as numbers anymore, we're actually seen as humans and people and love as well.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Use what you have, start where you are, do what you can, never give up.
That rattled off well.
It's been there for a while.
That was very good. Thank you very much for joining me. You've been listening to Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio, a weekly show on sustainability topics brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. The show is co-hosted by Shane Gallagher and me, Samuel Mann. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio, oar.org.nz, and podcast on sustainablelens.org. On sustainablelens.org, we're building up a searchable archive of conversations with people from many different fields who are applying their skills to a sustainable future. In our conversations, we try to find out what motivates them and what it means to see the world through a sustainable perspective, through their sustainable lens. Tonight's sustainable lens, even though she calls it a regenerative lens, was that of Fiona Clements, who well describes herself as a zero-waste textile practitioner. You can follow the links on sustainablelens.org to find us on Facebook to keep in touch, and you can listen to Sustainable Lens via all the poddy places as well. That was Sustainable Lens. I'm Samuel Mann. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Take ORFM Dunedin with you wherever you go with podcasts and live streaming of Primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.